Suspicion and distrust, and turning from the course just as far as I'm guided by some So since we're all in need of it, then maybe we all need to learn how to give it. So we need to go from the destruction of God, because I think we look at the dysfunctional ways in which we do try to handle situations like this. How do we look at the way that Jesus would have us do it? So I want you to think about this. We're going to look at a couple of stories. We're going to put a bunch of scripture together. And then I pray that by the time we're done, that it makes sense. Okay? I want you to think of the story that I've been in this for provide for their child. How many of you want to have that conversation with one of their parents? But should they? Shouldn't we? Of course we should. If nothing else, do it for the wife, do it for the child. But we're also, according to remember from last week, remember who we're supposed to be concerned about the most. We're supposed to be concerned about them the most. So how we do this, how we offer this, should be completely dictated by was at study with them, and we did not. They liked me, and I really enjoyed being with them. They were just one of those couples that we just loved to be with. And they were doing so well in all their studies until one point came up. One particular point, when I started talking about temperance for alcohol as we practice. We practice total abstinence in the Adventist Church, and I want to say right here and now, I'm all for it. Completely for it. I have a particular view when it comes to alcohol. You won't find me wavering on it too terribly much. I hate alcohol, but I love people. And what they told me was that they consumed a glass of wine no more than two per week on two particular special meals. Never any more than that. And I said, oh, okay. I didn't say that it was okay. I just listened to them. And I wasn't sure what to tell them that particular day, but I could tell that something else was going on right here. This wasn't just about the alcohol itself. This wasn't about that, because I told them, they did their studies about red grapes and red wine and cardiovascular health. I told them that it was the greatest thing. I did all of those things, but something else was bothering them. And they finally told me what it was. It was that picture. For 13 weeks, they drove an hour and a half one way, twice a week, actually three times a week, two for the meetings and one for church. For 13 weeks, they loved what they were doing. They loved the people that were living at home. But when they got to this park, they told what they told me. They told it to a couple of members of that church. And that particular set, that they showed up in the church, someone who they had not met yet in the church walked up to them, handed them a pamphlet, and in a strange whisper that you can hear off Broadway, said, "I understand you have a drinking problem. Read this." They showed up to our church that time. They had been away by the time they get 6 chapters in, there's a lot of time that doesn't have anything anymore. He's not arguing about their argument theologically anymore. He's arguing about the way that they're doing it. He says, you know what? I look to the whole kindness, forsake the fear of the Almighty. You tell me that I'm forsaken the fear of the Almighty. I won't accept this sin that you think I can keep from you, that God is not cheating anymore. But I tell you right now, if you were a bit more kinder, I might listen to you. He says, but this is what you do. My commands are treacherous. They're like a torrent that, like precious that pass away. You know what they're saying? They're like a trash truck. They come in and they kill everything. Everything's clean, but it's all dead. That's what they did. They wanted to put those two numbers. They wanted them clean, but it didn't matter. They killed them. You already killed them in the process. Joseph's teaching you, the ones that supposedly are doing the reproving, you teach me, and I'll be well. And I'll be silent. Make me understand. I have a problem. How do you restore our honest word? But you recruit. What does it recruit? He said, it doesn't matter how true it is. If you're not kind, I'm not going to listen to you. Especially when he's sitting there grieving over his children that he lost. And covered with woman. And trying to comfort a wife that lost children. And they want to talk about the sin, but they want to talk about. Notice here, whose responsibility is it to teach? The recruiter. And it's our responsibility if they listen. It's the recruiter's responsibility to bring understanding. And it takes more than honesty. It's the recruiter's responsibility to know the difference. We need to know who we're talking to. We need to know exactly what will work and what won't. So when you look at it this way, when you look at our scripture reading now in Deuteronomy, where it says, if any of you put a stumbling block before any of my children, look back and think of the stumbling block that we place in front of children, teach them to sin the way they need to. And that's not what he's talking about at all, is it? A stumbling block merely could be when you reprove one of these little ones about their sin. That becomes the stumbling block. He says, stumbling blocks are inevitable. Stumbling blocks are inevitable. They will come. But what did he say to that expert? But woe by who they will come. When one of my little ones stumble, now is when you leave it back. And he said, don't be a stumbling block. The new way to look at this scripture, when we know that it's our responsibility as recruiters to make sure that they don't lie, that they don't stumble. So the first thing we've got to do is we have to check our motive. We have to check our motive. Ancient Jewish text, love accompanied by criticism is not love. The motive is moving back the other way. Criticism unaccompanied by love is not love, right? No, they're actually saying that the rabbis are actually saying that this ancient Jewish text, that love accompanied unaccompanied by criticism is not love. You have to love. Criticism of someone you love should hurt you. If this feels a little too good, then maybe we're the ones that should be doing it. We have to check our motive. I've had people come to me in years. we are